special rank of Rajarshi, from different dynasties of sages. When they all assembled together to meet the emperor, Pritiksit, he received them properly and bowed his head to the ground. Purport. The system of bowing the head to the ground to show respect to superiors is an excellent etiquette which obliges the honored guest deep into the heart. Even the first gate offender is excused simply by this process, and Maharaj Pritiksit, although honored by all the rishis and kings, welcomed all the big men in that humble etiquette in order to be excused from any offenses. Generally, at the last stage of one's life, this humble method is adopted by every sensible man in order to be excused before a departure. In this way, Maharaj Pritiksit implored everyone's goodwill for going back home, back to God. Om again, it's an understanding. Once again, we are at the scene of Pritiksit Maharaj's departure. He has 7 days to live. He left his kingdom and family sitting on the bank of the Ganges. And the sages from all over the universe are arriving, because they know that Srimad Bhagavatam will be spoken, and they won't be here. Although Pritiksit Maharaj is emperor of the world, of course now he's retired, he receives all the guests by bowing his head to the ground, showing that humility is already a jewel. Lord Caitanya has said that etiquette is the jewel of the Vaishnava. A devotee knows how to treat different kinds of devotees. How to deal with equals, how to deal with inferiors and superiors. Now you may ask, how can anybody in devotional service be superior, inferior, or equal? Certainly, we are all spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna. In that way, we are equal. Nevertheless, we have different degrees of spiritual attainment. And so the etiquette is in reference to those different degrees of spiritual attainment. So we treat older devotees differently than we treat newer devotees. It's all based on understanding that in every situation there will always be someone better, someone worse, and someone the same. Pritiksit Maharaj is bowing his head to everyone, although actually he's on the level of Sukadeva Goswami. He's about to speak to him at bottom. Sukadeva Goswami is acting like a complete Paramahansa, Avadhuta. He's wandering around naked. And the women and children, they're not disturbed because they can see Sukadeva Goswami is completely free from the bodily platform. So he's wandering around the towns and countryside naked, showing the behavior of an Avadhuta. Avadhuta is one who doesn't display any adherence to Vedic rules and regulations for proper behavior in this material world. They just act beyond all that and simply remain absorbed in transcendence without any reference to proper behavior in this world. Lord Vrishabhdev would do that. You can read in the fifth canto how Lord Vrishabhdev, the incarnation of Krishna, for seeking knowledge, he would lie down on and pass stool freely. But his stool was so special because it was coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it would make the countryside aromatic for 40 miles in every direction. So unless you can do that, we don't recommend you. The Avadhuta stage of life, not stage of life, but type of behavior is there because sometimes Krishna wants his devotees to demonstrate that this material world is totally insignificant and totally unimportant, and therefore such devotees don't even follow Vedic rules for proper behavior. Generally, though, Krishna wants his devotees to add prestige to the Vedic injunctions, add prestige to the Vedic rules and regulations, so the devotees follow them even though they are above them. Another famous Avadhuta is Lord Nityananda. A name for Lord Nityananda is Avadhuta Chandra. He's the moonlight Avadhuta. And he can, in his pastime of Lord Nityananda, he can definitely do things that have nothing to do with the Vedic injunctions for proper behavior. It's all according to what Krishna wants. Krishna always has some mission to do in this world, how to rectify the conditioned soul. So most of the time he sends devotees or empowers devotees in order to add value to the Vedic injunctions. But on special occasions, Krishna can send devotees or empower devotees to totally disregard Vedic injunctions for behavior in this world and just display absorption in Krishna consciousness. One of the spiritual masters in our line recently in this century was like that, Lord Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He displayed the pastimes of not being able to read or write, yet every time he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, it was perfect Vedic conclusion. And the greatest scholarly devotee of the age, of the Greek age, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, accepted Gaur Kishore Das Babaji as his spiritual master, even though Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was illiterate. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was the greatest scholar since a young age. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji would chant Hare Krishna next to a latrine. And if you've ever been to India, latrines definitely let you know that they're latrines. Remember that, Jen? You have no there's no mistake about where you're at. You are outside of a latrine. So he would chant Hare Krishna to us, because in this way no one would disturb him. So you might be curious, why would people disturb him? No one cares if you chant Hare Krishna here. You could just sit in the street and chant and with your beads, and who would care for you, for the most part. But this is India, and the people knew, he's a great saintly person. What do you get from a great saintly person? Who knows? What do you think they're thinking? What do I get from a great saintly person? Oh, well, most of them aren't thinking like that. It's India, the land of Dharma, so they do understand a saintly person can give something, but they weren't all looking for knowledge or mercy. They're looking for a material benediction. Oh, he's a famous saintly person. He just chants Hare Krishna. He's fully absorbed in transcendence. We'll go to him and get some material blessing. That's what it's like. Even in India today, it's like that. Although culture is breaking down, still, people know. A saintly person can get his benediction. He'll get well. He'll get good life. You're free from disease. Many people, they are attracted to this so-called Baba, because he shows the ability to give material benediction. And people, they think that's the real blessing of the saintly person. They don't know the real blessing of the saintly person is to become free from material life. Just like Lord Chaitanya was once cursed by a brahmana who was envious. I believe he was envious because he couldn't get into the nighttime kirtans that were happening at Srivas Thakur's house. And they would shut the door and keep all the blasphemers and Vedic ritualists out. Yeah. So this brahmana was angry. He couldn't get into the kirtan, I believe. So he cursed Lord Chaitanya the next day. When a brahmana makes a curse, he takes his thread, brahmana thread, he breaks it, and he utters his curse. Curse of a brahmana is very powerful. Not these days, but I mean, that's why Prithvi Maharaj, externally, that's why he's in the situation he's in, because he got cursed by a young brahmana boy to die in 7 days. So this brahmana cursed Lord Chaitanya. May you be bereft of all material happiness. That is my curse upon you. You'll never enjoy material happiness. And what did Lord Chaitanya do when he heard about that? Oh, how wonderful this is! How wonderful this is! No material happiness! How, what a great fortune! Now, Gorgasuddha's Babaji Maharaj, he would chant Hare Krishna via latrine because he didn't want the general population bothering him, always asking for some benediction. That's the way it is in India, even now. If you're wearing saffron or dressed like a Babaji wearing white cloth, you know, they just come up to you and never mind what your spiritual qualities actually are, they're just hoping, you know, you can't lose. They try to touch your feet, you know, give me benediction. You know, it doesn't cost you anything to ask, and who knows, you might get a material benediction. So, it's like that even now, and it was more so like that at the beginning of the century, of the 20th century. So, Rupa Sridhar's Babaji, to avoid all that, he would chant by a latrine, and no one would want to go near him. So, one time, a rich person, pious person, rich, wealthy, wanted to invite Gorkhasuddha's Babaji to a Sankirtan festival. So he sent some messenger to Babaji Maharaj and said, oh, please come, we're having a great congregational gathering for glorifying the holy name. Now you might think, well, sure, Gorkhasuddha's Babaji Maharaj would have immediately agreed. But he was displaying the activities of a Paramahamsa, and he, of course, had nothing against glorifying Krishna, but he knew the motives of this person weren't pure. So he sent back a message, no. And again he was invited. And finally he said, does this man think he owns me? Does he think I'm like one of his tenants? That I have to respond to his beckoning? See, this was Gorkhasuddha's Babaji's mission. That's his service given by Krishna. Ordinarily, if someone invites you for a home program or a Sankirtan festival, oh, wonderful. You glorify them and overlook all their motives. But Gorkhasuddha's Babaji Maharaj, his mission was to point out anything not pure. So he says, I'm not going to your Sankirtan festival. Your motives aren't pure. You think you own me? So finally, the man came himself to beg Gorkhasuddha's Babaji to come. Please, Babaji Maharaj, I shall be your devotee. You are everything. Please, it is all your mercy. Please, whatever you say, I'll do. We just want to get your spiritual blessing. So Gorkhasuddha's Babaji Maharaj said, oh, whatever I say, you'll do? Yes, Babaji Maharaj, it is all your mercy. So Gorkhasuddha's Babaji said, okay. Sit down right here with me and chant Hare Krishna. Meet me the man's flesh. Sit down by the latrine with me and we'll chant, jump in the yellow. Right away. Another thing that Gorkhasuddha's Babaji Maharaj used to do was he would chant his japa underneath an upside down rowboat so no one would find him. So whenever people are looking for him, they have to overturn rowboats. You've got to find out which one he was under. Sometimes Krishna has his devotees. Most of the time, however, they display adherence to the Vedic rules and regulations for proper behavior. That system for proper behavior helps us to order our life in the material world. So Lord Chaitanya has said that, as I said before, etiquette is the jewel of the Vaishnava. It curbs our lording over tendency, and it orders our savage ways when we understand something about Vaishnava etiquette. As Prabhupada writes here, even the first grade offender is excused simply by this process. Bowing the head to the ground. These days, of course, people don't appreciate that. Just like I noticed, generally, here everybody understands, but you know, this is a preaching center. And we're not trying to inundate the people immediately into all the various things about devotee behavior. But I noticed, like, when I was in the room a few days ago talking with Brendan and Jared, after that, we were having a deep discussion. So some devotees were this thing. So after I finished talking, they had victories and I was down their head to the floor and sort of like, what's going on here? Sometimes I like to joke that, oh, they're looking for something, they lost their keys, so they're because, you know, people, you know, they just, you know, what is this bowing, you know?
Well,
you're a person, he's a person he's bowing to him for. And they look at you like, you know,
yeah, you're accepting all of this. You thought you were spiritual.
So, like I say, here at the, when we have preaching programs here at the loft, we don't just that at all, because we're trying to break down as many barriers as possible that people imagine are there. So, they don't want to admit any kind of acknowledgement. They don't want to acknowledge any kind of humility. That's considered a weakness. You've got to show everybody you're as strong as them. And you have to show them that you're getting as much material enjoyment as them. Competition. A dog race. You never let your guard down. You never let anybody know your weaknesses. You keep your cards close to your chest. You only reveal yourself when it's beneficial for your Zen gratification. Otherwise, you don't. This is how people live. So, the last thing they would think is that there's some value to humility. Just like in the Bible, it is stated, the meek shall inherit the earth. Jesus said that in the Beatitudes. So the modern purport to that is, yes, the meek shall inherit the earth. They'll be 2 meters under the earth. That's the modern commentary. People think, you know, why should I be meek? Why should I be humble? Get out and get all you can get. That's your birthright. Power, passion, and profit. It's all there for you. Like one devotee was telling me yesterday how he's been trained by his father from a young age that the opposite sex should be just utilized fully, and then don't worry if there's any problem because there's so many others. There's so many fish in the sea. So just grab a fish, squeeze it, and if there's some problem, there's another fish nearby. This is the successful attitude people make. Don't worry, there's so many other people around. Don't worry that you're abusing someone. There's so many others around. Just do what you gotta do. That's the mantra. You gotta do what you gotta do, and you don't go out of your way to hurt anybody. But if you're actually doing what you gotta do and someone gets hurt, well, it's understandable because you are doing what you gotta do. This is the so-called morality today. And once you get tired of doing what you got to do with somebody, then you just drop them aside. You're just not interesting anymore. One of our devotees met, and right before he became a devotee, his girlfriend dropped him and told him, "You're just boring." I won't tell you who it is. He's boring.
So he like got a real complex from that.
I'm boring. A girl has dropped me because she said I'm boring. My whole life is ruined. Wow, I must be really out of it. I'm boring. She was a girl of his dreams, you know, the young man, you know. He had the girl of his dreams. Of course she was a flash. You know, every young man always thinks his girlfriend is a flash. You know. She could be as plain as, plain as a yogurt carton, but still. My girlfriend, yeah, she was really good looking. Just really flash. But and then to be dropped like that, you know, it was boring. It was like a real blow to him. So he began to understand something about material life in that condition. It was a real blow to his ego of being the enjoyer. But he was dropped by the girl in his dream for being boring. That's the way it is. You know, you tend to get a complex from that. Or another devotee here. Lady was telling me how because she wouldn't, you know, she wasn't very liberal and she wasn't very charitable to the young men in high school. So everybody would get on to pace. The men would tell the other ladies in high school, you know, and then they would get on her case, you know, and the men would get on her case. This way you'd have all this peer pressure going against you. You're not very charitable. Everybody would be very liberal. Who do you think you are? Yeah. So, these things tend to scar you psychologically. You think that,
what's wrong with me?
I'm not fit for material enjoyment. This is the greatest disaster these days, to see yourself as unfit for material enjoyment, to be considered by society in that way. You don't want your friends to know. Can you imagine having yourself under your mate?
You know, the girl of my dreams, she put me down because I was born.
So you make something up real quick. Well, you know, we just, we had been together for a while, and we tried to explore other options. She never said the truth. She got me because I was born. And similarly, the ladies, if they have any honor these days, which they don't, they would never admit that they were dropped because they couldn't bring themselves to be liberal. They always just, we just didn't have the same interests. We found that out after a while. But actually, the ladies are just feeling actually very hurt and wounded.
Maybe there's something wrong with me, produce, what I'm supposed to produce.
And honestly, people become very disturbed. I remember, it sounds small, but these things actually go deep into the psyche. I remember when I was in, what grade was it? Oh, it must have been, later than I thought. Starting the 10th grade, which means I must have been 16 years old. So, somehow I couldn't bring myself to be a sensory girl. Being a sensory girl when you're 15 means, just holding hands and stuff like that. Very much back then, So, I remember in school, I was 16, and the girls, they were always, they were from, they were throwing their prowess around, and of course when there's someone who's not submitting to the prowess, it makes it, the forbidden fruit is even more attractive. So, back then, the big thing was, it's nothing like it is now, So, I remember, I was 15, and one of the, school bell, the real high-powered number, marched up to me in the hallway with her friend, and just kind of, stuck her face, 3 centimeters from mine, and said, "All right, how are you going to do? Are you going to kiss me?" And all the friends are watching, and I just kind of froze. And then she turns with all her friends, and she says, "See, you can't even do that." So I had like a big blow to me. What's wrong with me? And then some of the bullies, the tough guys in the high school, found out about it. The guys who always talk more than they do, If you listen to them, they've had a different girl every night, and they beat up everybody in the old city, That's the way they talk, So these, the high-powered girls, they were always in contact with the tough guys, it was all part of the folk class, so they immediately told the tough guys.
So she stuck her face right in front of his, and he dared him to kiss her, and he didn't even do it.
And so the tough guy flipped out.
"Wow, I would have done anything to be with that girl. Where's that guy? We're going to beat him."
So I came up to the after school and,
"Is that true? You had a chance to so and so. You didn't do anything about it? Ah. We
gotta fight."
I
couldn't believe, "We gotta fight. It's the only response. We gotta fight." So, these things, they sound funny now, but actually when you're that age, or when you're taking that kind of thing seriously, it actually it wounds you very deeply. So that is what life is like today. People are very wounded. They've all had so many hurts, which they're trying to hide because you can't let your guard down. You got to show that you're expert. So let everybody know you're competent. You got everything figured out. You're on top of everything. You know how to enjoy. You know how to party. You know all these things. That's the impression you have to give. It's a jungle. And you have to show that you're a fierce animal. It's a compliment to be called a party animal, a party girl, a party guy. It's a conquest. That conquest. sacrifice. One other devotee was telling me, after you get the nibble on the hook, after, you know, you kind of start a relationship with a young girl, immediately you go tell your mate,
"Glad you know, the girl you saw me meet, we're getting together, yeah, I'll be going over her house today. It's all like a conquest."
And probably the girls are on the phone to their mate.
"Yeah, you know, didn't take much to get him interested, you know. Yeah, he'll be coming over tonight. But probably he's going to not call me for a day just to pretend he's being cool about it."
So probably what you have is, you know, those parties are pretending they're cool and not calling each other. And then the next day they call each other. And this way, everyone likes to show that they're competent, they're wholesome, they got it together. No question of acknowledging humility. This is what disturbs intelligent people about material life, that you're just trapped into this kind of behavior. You're trapped into being a cat and dog. There's no other option. You have no other choice, and society condemns this behavior. And then you will get smashed, but you can't admit it to anyone. You cannot admit it to anyone. Keep it to yourself. So that's what's happening. You're seeing so many people today coming here, and they're very hurt. They're very devastated, but they're hiding it. They're, you know, they're keeping their head up. They don't want to admit. And so many of our devotees, they've been very hurt in this real life. They've been very abused. They've been mistreated. This has to be dealt with spiritually, through cleansing by chanting Hare Krishna. Otherwise, these things can haunt them. These things are still lingering. The pain is still lingering in the material psyche due to past hurts. We have to realize that everyone is basically a walking basket case these days. That is the effect of material society. No one knows how to treat anyone. So people are very vicious. Although they externally act very genteel sometimes, actually they're very vicious. If there's anything that gets in the way of your sense derivation, you gotta do what you gotta do. So, intelligent persons are tired of it. They just don't want to be living such an animalistic, bestial life. They want to try to have their own values, their own standards. But immersed in material nature, how can you have your own values and your own standards? Not possible. And that's another thing that drives them crazy. When they finally figure out, it's hopeless. You can't do it, even if you wanted to. You can't maintain a sincere life, even if you wanted to. You're just a drop in the ocean. Very devastating thought. That even if you wanted to live a life according to your own concocted principles, so you could feel good about yourself, "Oh, I'm not like everybody else. I've got a bit of a different insight, and I don't do this, I don't do that." Just like one devotee was telling me yesterday how he wasn't like the other guy. He wouldn't, you know, cohabit with the girl on the first night. He always waits 2 nights. The other guys immediately, but he would wait 2 nights. Just to, you know, be more human. So, in this way, we might concoct some false principles for ourselves, you know. These other guys, you know. As soon as a girl blinks an eye, they're fully into it, but I'll wait 2 nights. You might try to have that sense of honor, but the modes of nature will not let you. You're just a drop in a bucket, and you become overpowered, and you can't even hold on to your own self-concocted principles, and that really depresses you. So if you're a bit intelligent, finally you get so frustrated. What am I going to do? What's the purpose of this world? You feel so empty. You've done all the things everyone said you're supposed to do for happiness, and you're miserable as anything. And finally you just wonder, what's going on? What do I do? But who can you admit this weakness to? Who can you admit that you failed? So who can you say, "I failed at material enjoyment"? You can't tell your friends that. Can you imagine telling your friends that you failed at material enjoyment? Then could you be telling your friends that? No way. The best you can say is, "Well, I'm just feeling a bit down this weekend, you know. And sometimes I feel like life is, you know, really a torture." You can say things like that. Everybody says like that. But to just point blank admit, "I can't take this. I can't live this kind of life. I'm a failure at this kind of living." They all just look at you. It's like
in Wade's situation. You know, his family is wondering that.
Is he sending up the white flag? Is he in some way indicating that he's not going to pursue material enjoyment?
Oh, this is a great offense.
So therefore they get very mobilized.
No one can be for real. Everyone has to play let's pretend. As soon as someone wants to be for real, then it's a great catastrophe. The others feel intimidated by that.
No, you gotta pretend you.
No.
Come on, you gotta do like we did. It's all a family, and you're part of this society.
If everyone became like those Hare Krishnas, what would happen to the world?
How would practical things go on if everyone just chanted Hare Krishna?
The people feel threatened
by anyone who wants to be for real. Because being for real means you have to pay the price to learn how to control your senses.
As long as you cannot control your senses, you'll never be for real. And we devotees have to remember that. The basis of Krishna consciousness is sense control. And as soon as we forget that, we cannot be for real. Bhakti yoga is built on controlling the senses, restricting them from sense enjoyment and engaging them in Krishna's service. That's the foundation of bhakti. The first verse of Upadeshamrita in the next written section. Vacho Vedam Manasa Krodha Vedam Jiva Vedam Udaya Tattva Vedam.
The six pushing agents, they have to be controlled. We have to have a systematic program for controlling the six pushing agents by engaging in Krishna service. Otherwise, unless you are dhira, sober, able to control your senses, you cannot be for real. And that's why people don't respect religionists anymore, those who say they are religious, because people don't see any program for sense control. You're doing just like us. It's just you say you believe in Jesus, but you're doing just like us. Krishna consciousness is meant to demonstrate that we're not doing like everybody else. And the basis of that demonstration is mind and sense control. So therefore, the point in devotional life is always, how am I going to keep my senses under control? How are you going to do that? By engaging them in Krishna service. Therefore, we stress devotional service so much, because we're not negativists, we're not depressing. We are engaging in a higher activity. We're engaging the senses in a higher activity. Humility is very necessary for a devotee to admit that you've been bewildered by material life, to admit that you failed at material enjoyment. These are all great qualities in devotional life. Lord Caitanya, he's known as Akinchana Gosha. He's the property of those who are materially exhausted. The devotees, you'll find, they're the only ones that will admit. They'll talk like, I tried to enjoy, but I failed. I tried pursuing the illusion, I just got frustrated. I tried for something and it turned out different. And the audience will admit that. They're being for real. No one else will admit that kind of a thing. So, reality, being for real, is based on humility. And sense control. Without sense control, you won't be humble either. Uncontrolled senses means motor passion. In contact with a lot of passion, you always are aggressive about your desires, so you can't be humble. When the senses are controlled, then you can be humble. But don't think you can be humble while engaging in the mode of passion. No, it makes you like a lean, hungry wolf. Therefore, the basis of everything is sense control. Then you can see things clearly. Now Pritchett Maharaj is at the last stage of his life, and he's adopting a basic technique in Vaishnava etiquette. Before his departure from this world, he's asking everyone, please excuse any offenses he's made. This is the technique. Before you leave, you ask, if there's anybody I've inadvertently offended, please forgive me. Even Prabhupada did that before his departure. He called his god brothers around him. I said that sometimes in the course of preaching, I may have said something, please forgive me, and
they made an offense. And they'll all tell them, no, 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 you haven't made any offense. If anyone thinks you made an offense, they are the offenders. And no, you simply did the most wonderful thing like that. So that's the etiquette at the last stage of life, to ask forgiveness for any offenses you've unconsciously made. So you can depart the world without any ill feeling. So, Prabhupada writes here, generally at the last stage of one's life, this humble method is adopted by every sensible man in order to be excused before departure. In this way, Maharaj Pritchett implored everyone's goodwill for going back home, back to God. Any questions? If you properly absorb your consciousness in devotional service, it will go away. If there's a problem, it means that not proper absorption. Bhakti yoga, as described by Loka Piladeva, will consume your subtle body, just like the stomach assimilates food. To the lining, similarly bhakti yoga will. That will digest your subtle body, and your subtle body is what contains all these thoughts, tissues, and bruises, and this and that. But if you don't absorb yourself in bhakti yoga properly, yes, it will haunt you. So, often we have to deal with devotee problems caused by their lack of proper absorption in Krishna consciousness, and therefore the scar tissue starts to manifest. Ideally, a Van Ashram system would take care of that. In other words, all right, you're not really prepared to completely deal with yourself, then here, just take this duty and be attached to it. Be a sudra, work, be a vaishya, make money or farm, be a kshatriya, organize or protect, be a brahmana, and use your scholarly skills. That's what the Van Ashram Dharma system is there for. You're not completely ready to deal with yourself as a 100% Vaishnava, so here, have some authorized material attachment. Van Ashram Dharma means authorized material attachment, so that you can gradually deal with it. On this little island amidst a raging ocean of material life, where there's no family support, no government support, this puts great demands on older devotees. Great demands. You have to think. Should I treat this person like they want to be a pure Vaishnava, even though I know they don't? How much of their material desire should I acknowledge? How much I should understand that regardless of what they say, they're going to remain attached in the future? It's all very difficult. Someone may come up to you and, yeah, I'm just going to surrender, I'm just going to give it all up. It's all my... And you're thinking, that's good, but we've heard this before, so. What to do? You don't want to change the person, but at the same time, you don't want them to delude themselves and pretend to be on a platform they're not. So it's very difficult. It requires guidance. To give guidance, we require qualified persons. But you'll never be qualified to give guidance unless you can control your mind and senses. So every devotee who wants to make a serious contribution has to learn the art of controlling your mind and senses according to a plan. That's the basis of Krishna consciousness. Your mind and senses are controlled according to a plan. Very systematic. And material life will not allow any systematic program for your mind and senses. They just go every which way for anything. And people consider it happiness. You're walking down the street and some aroma comes under your nose. Shish kebab. You need to go to it. Another aroma comes to your nose, McDonald's or this Chinese restaurant. Immediately you go. That's considered happiness. But the happiness of Krishna consciousness is based on sense control, restraining the senses, and engagement in Krishna service. So hopefully you all can understand what makes Krishna consciousness, what makes applying it difficult. It's not the process. It's the age that you chose to live in. Everyone's carrying a certain degree of scar tissue from the past, and also not everyone wants to serve Krishna purely. So this causes a great juggling act. therefore we have to have devotees who are qualified to give guidance and counseling based on where a person's actually at and what they probably will do in the future. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Take what exactly with you? Let me give an example. So you mean, let's say if you are hurt by someone in this life and you have scar tissue, will you take that into your next life? What makes you think you'd be in a form of life where it would matter? When you're in a piggy body, it's not going to matter, you know, who hurts you as a human being. You're in a pig's body now. You have to think like a pig. That's the cruelty of material nature. You never think of it that way. Yeah, that's what's going on. When you're in the body of a tree, you've lost the human form of life, and you've taken a tree body, well, what does it matter? You know, these little circumstances of being hurt by someone. Your karma is such that you have to get the tree body. Yes, that's the way the feeling to work. People are thinking these days like they're all going to be human beings if there is reincarnation. No way. Most of them will not. Most of them will not be human beings in that spirit. Their only hope is to come across a devotee and render some service. That's their only hope. By taking prasad, that assures them that they'll take prasad again in the next life. It doesn't mean automatically they're in the human form that they're taking prasad. It just guarantees that somehow or other they will take prasad again in the next life. Maybe it'll be as a dog, but still, they'll take prasad again. Book distribution gives them the ability to have a human form of life, even if they don't buy the book. You just get the book in their hands and they appreciate how nice it is. That's enough to give them a human form of life, even if they don't buy it. So book distributors should always remember what they're doing. They're making the most extraordinary intervention into these people's karma. You're not just hawking merchandise. First of all, the merchandise isn't ordinary, it's Krishna. And secondly, the merchandise is so extraordinary that even if the people don't buy it, they just appreciate it. They get a human form of life. So you're going out there and making the most extraordinary intervention into their cycle of birth and death. And sometimes Krishna has them render service to a devotee even though they don't know what they're doing. Prompted by the super soul. That's called a jhaka sukriti, unknowingly rendering service. Like when I was on the airplane in Australia, there's one devotee traveling with me, and so he had his hat, his straw hat, in the overhead bin, so I reached up and got it and handed it to him. I didn't know people were watching. So then I reached up to get my own bag, and then like three people just kind of, you know, all of a sudden went to get the same bag. Yeah. And one got it, you know, and handed me the bag, and then all of a sudden they snapped to him, you know, what are we doing this to him for? It was too late, they had done it. That's Krishna in art. Use your jams. Render some service. So they didn't even know what came over them. And afterwards they're kind of sheepish, like, hey, he could have got his own bag. How do we do that? Well, all of a sudden three people, you know, just went to get the bag. Well, that's Paramatma in the heart. Even the ones who didn't get the bag because they tried, they get credit. Krishna's not. He's in the heart, he's noted. You tried to serve a Vaishnav, someone beat you to the punch, but you tried, you get a chance again. Any other questions, ladies? karma. You wanted certain things, and according to your karma, you can get. Just like somebody may want a car, but doesn't mean you're going to get a Mercedes, right? You have to have the ability to pay for the Mercedes. So you want a material happiness, and you just had enough karma to pay for Kali Yuga. So here you are. So to speak, you wanted the conditions that were present here. By your previous behavior, you indicated, this is what I want. Tommy, you have any questions?
Thank you.